On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show with Aaron the Power Bauer, the Reggae Warrior, Ross Peltier, the Italian Stallion, or Mini, Elliot Minchella, and Robbie Hunter Paul.
Kia ora and g'day and welcome to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show. We're going to be talking nothing but rugby league, rugby league, rugby league for the next hour or so. This evening we're giving away a free pair of tickets to the Huddersfield Giants game this Friday night against Leeds Rhinos. You just need to hit the pulse2.co.uk and answer this question.
Rugby league was formed in Huddersfield at the George Hotel, but in what year?
Big L Crabtree, Big L Crabtree's voice is that. We all know it from everywhere in the world. So all you need to do, very simple, just go to pulse2.co.uk/RHP show and leave the answer. No, yes, no. I'm just looking at producer Luke, just pulse2.co.uk. Don't have to do the forward slash. And leave your answer there. So which year was rugby league formed? What was the year? Okay, cool. All right, let's kick on with the Rugby League Show. This is Robbie Hunter Paul Show. Boom. Boys, what a weekend it was for you guys, eh? Bradford Bulls boys got back on the field.
Yeah, good to be back.
Good to be back. And you got a win as well.
Yeah, win's a win. Wasn't a great performance, but another 2 points on the board.
It's quite interesting because I interviewed Chizzy directly, straight from the field with the Bulls live content that they were going out, and he was pretty disappointed as well. The first half was stop and start for you guys, but what was what did John say? John Key, your head coach, say at halftime?
Oh, at halftime, he wasn't too happy with how it was going. You know, he wasn't too happy with us not completing. Like I think he said it, papers and stuff. He feels we didn't give them enough respect. You know, we're just trying to play quick rugby from the first minute, and it didn't go to plan. And I think we let ourselves down a bit first half.
I mean, that's the nature. When things have been going as well as they have, you know, you had the game against West Wales, put 80 points on them, a really good run out against Keighley as well. Sometimes you can maybe fall in love with yourself, get too comfortable. I know it's a bit of an awkward way to say it like that. You know, I don't mean it like that, but sometimes you can get into that rhythm where you think it's just, we just need to turn up. It was a sunny day. First time you got to run on a dry pitch. And maybe just that helps with you just getting a little bit lackadaisical?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're the first to admit that as well, that we had a review and it was quite honest review. You know, people held their hand up and where we went wrong and, you know, how we're going to fix that. And, don't get me wrong, we weren't very happy with that performance. But, you know, like I said earlier, it's still a win and Unslet are a good team and, we're just happy with the win. But we'll fix up. Obviously, Friday night's game is going to be very tough. Against Oldham, we can't afford to start how we did, and we'll rectify that.
Look, Aaron, you grew up on the terraces. So the head coach coming from Oldham is Scott Naylor. You watched him play quite a number of times, and obviously you've also had the ability, you know, had the exposure of the levels that he's been coaching in up and down the both Super League Championship and in the League One. How do you think he's going to be? I think he's played 8 years at the Bulls. He'll be coming here to rev his boys up, won't he?
Yeah, I think if Oldham are anything like Scott Naylor, how he was as a player, they're going to be tough to beat, aren't they? Tough to break down, really resolute. That's what I always remember about Scott Naylor playing in those big games. His opposite numbers could never get the better of him. I think he had so many battles with Keith Senior throughout the years, and Keith could just never get past him. He was one of the few players who Senior could never beat. I saw them recently play Halifax in the Cup. They knocked them out. I saw them knock Hull KR out of the Challenge Cup about 18 months ago. So I think they'll view it in a similar kind of way. I mean, look, they come to Oddsall as underdogs. They are very much the underdogs. Bradford look like the team to beat, or one of the teams to beat in League One at the minute. And I think they'll approach it that way. Bradford, I'm sure, will be better for Sunday. I know, obviously, a big philosophy of John's from when he's come in, the lads have been saying, is defensively sound, and then we go from there, build from the bottom up. And again, they only conceded 12 points at the weekend, so that's certainly something going in the right direction for me. But it's another big test. I mean, it's a tough start, isn't it? York, Keighley, Hunslet, Oldham, and then Hunslet in the Cup again. Mm-hmm. In terms of League One, I know there are easier games. That's a pretty mean opening five games.
It is, and it's to be tested as well. Ross, was there anything of you guys thinking, you know what, we've got a very busy period coming up. We've got to play Hunslet again for the rearranged Challenge Cup game on this coming Monday. Obviously, Oldham going to be a tougher, one of the more tougher opponents in League One. Was there any element of that with you guys projecting forward to what was coming up, or was it purely and simply maybe you just didn't go into the game with the right frame of mind?
Yeah, I don't think it were on anyone's mind, or this period's been on anyone's mind. I just think, you know, we didn't prepare from the warm-up in the changing room. I think we said it were a bit quiet in the dressing room before the game. I think we just started slow. You know, they scored first, and then, you know, we dropped out. It went in a touch on that, our mistake, then they scored off back of that. So they scored off the back of our mistakes, and we were just turning over too much ball. I don't think we were thinking of anything. I think we just came into it undercooked. Yeah?
Look, I don't want to be overly negative, because it just seems like, oh, we're kind of talking about like you guys lost the game. You didn't, far from it, but you won the game and you won it comfortably. But what you're trying to state, the level of expectation that you've set yourself, not only what John set you, but what you've set yourself, is that you know you can play better.
Yeah, I think that shows where we are as a team and as a club. We just beat Unslet 32-12 on Sunday, and we're not very happy. And, you know,
everyone's dragging their knuckles. Yeah. You got hammered in the video session. Because you did, didn't you?
Yeah.
But I think you all had to put your hand up, stand up. John, it was my fault. I'm to blame. I am sorry. How can I make it better? And that's part of the pressure, because, the reserve side went up against a very strong Wigan reserve side last week, played well, beat them. And ultimately, that pressure has been poured back onto the starting lineup.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, the reserve boy, I went down to watch the game, and a great win. But that's putting pressure on us lads who were in the starting 17 from last week. Obviously, they're bringing the door down to John, saying, you know, we're putting our performance in his, and we're looking over our shoulders, which is healthy and good for the club. But yeah, like I said, we did win, and we wasn't very happy of how we performed. We're nowhere near as best. But that's a good sign. We wasn't very happy with where we were, so we're just going to get better.
Well, I think that is a good sign. I think it's a healthy sign of everyone of the mindset of the Bradford Bulls at this point in time. If your measuring stick is set at a really high bar, then you hope to achieve that. Okay, let's have a look around the Super League game. I think the game that we can't get past is that game with Leeds Rhinos and Castleford. Super League record for Leeds Rhinos, again, the opportunity to go and play in Allen Road, which far bypasses the restrictions that they had on the old Headingley, not the new Headingley being built, but 23,000 plus. So that was a great start, but what a game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was good to be there. You know, it felt like something out of the ordinary, not your normal Super League game. Both clubs marketed it really well, especially Leeds, obviously, with the Allen Road thing. I know Easter this weekend, looking forward to the Hull Derby and Wigan Saints, but that's catching up now as one of the big rivalries in the game is Leeds Cass. I think Leeds have been short of a really cutting-edge killer rivalry since Bradford fell away in the last decade or so. They've had some good games with the likes of Wakefield and Huddersfield, but this Leeds Cass game now, especially having played in that grand final last year, it's got a real edge to it. And they went to war on each other, didn't they? I thought that was a great game. Cass were white hot in that first 15 minutes, but Leeds dug in, fought their way back, and a bit of late drama at the end, a bumper crowd. It was everything good about Super League. I thought it was the best experience, the best atmosphere, maybe even the best game that I've seen so far this year. Hopefully more of that to come, and more innovation from the clubs in maybe being brave enough to take big games on the road and try different stuff.
Well, you know, in my household, I don't get to watch rugby league live. I have to actually go to a game and watch it live. And so I had to watch it the next morning on Saturday morning. And I just thought, what am I missing out on in my life? Yeah, my wife knows who I am. I mean, she knew who I was before I started this. So, you know, I've got to have that really awkward conversation with her to say, come on, we can watch live rugby league. Come on, love. Because I felt like I truly did after the game itself captured me. And, like, I'm supposed to be making the kids. My kids went hungry in the morning 120 minutes before they got a feed. I apologize. It was my fault. I will make it better, my family. But what a brilliant game. You know, when you're staring down the barrel, and this isn't easy, boys, and I'm turning towards you guys. Mm. How do you turn it around? When you're staring down the barrel, after 15 minutes, there's been an avalanche of rugby league brilliance just coming through every seam, it seems. How do you then put your mindset, turn it around, and get back into the game like Leeds did?
I think from Leeds, it's one of them things, you know, they had nothing to lose at that point. They could just go for it. You know, they could play with freedom, I think.
But they didn't throw caution to the wind, though, did they?
they did what Leeds do, and you know they get it back into games. You know they've just got that winning mentality. Whereas with this team, they've got so many injuries. You know, so many young lads playing, they're still managing to get results, and then they still manage to come back in the game. Like Ash Hanley at centre, he had a class game. You know, he was quality.
Well, is it something that you can mentally turn the switch on, or is it just sometimes it happens organically? Everyone gets in the rhythm, and you find your way back into the game.
For me, I think it's just the culture of the club. It's what for me, knowing past experience coming through that academy system, it's what you get taught from 15 years old. Never give in. Never, you know, the game's not over till the final whistle. Anything mm-hmm. can happen. And you've seen numerous times Leeds have come back over the years. And yeah, like I say, no matter who's playing, like Ross said, a few academy lads got the running out the other day. And they've all got the same culture, the same mentality.
Well, so just how good has Ash Hanley been over the last couple of games?
Yeah, he's been a revelation.
When I first saw him, maybe about two or three years ago, and I just thought, oh, this kid's all right. Mm-hmm. But actually, he over the last couple of games, he's hungry. But he's got himself into some situations over the last couple of years where he just got bent backwards. Mm-hmm. But on the weekend, he scored tries.
Yeah, he's playing really well, and I think he's out there to prove a point. He's you know, he hasn't been playing very much, and this year he's come in and really took his chance, and he's giving Brian McDermott a decision to make. Anyone, mm-hmm. you know, he's got to pick him. So you know, good luck to him.
Well, we can only say with Leeds scoring five tries and Castleford scoring four, but still coming away with a loss, that was their game to take. All right, we're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we're going to discuss Rick Stone being the first head coach with his head on the chopping block, and we'll do that after the traffic.
It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live in the studio with the power Aaron Bauer, the reggae warrior Ross Peltier, and the Italian stallion Elliot Mincella. In this segment, boys, we're going to be talking about the first coach, Huddersfield Giants head coach Rick Stone, being the first coach, I guess, to have his head on the chopping block. We know, look, guys, we all know it's a performance-related business that we're in. But the reality is we're only seven rounds into it. There's a long season ahead. First, let me ask the question. Did you see this coming?
Personally, I thought it'd be Steve Mack first one to go, but
we'll get to that because
I think after that Wigan game, they've been struggling, haven't they, from last season, this year. It's just been a long time. I think his win rate were about 33%, which I think for a team like Huddersfield, it's not good enough. So I didn't really see it coming, but you can understand it.
I mean, one of the things just on that, if you're looking at, they're currently sitting on 4 points. So they've had a couple of wins out of the seven. There's three other teams on 4 points, and there's two other teams on 6 points. Hull FC, Widnes Vikings, both on 6 points. Hull KR, Salford and Huddersfield are all on 4 points, with Catalans underneath them on two. But I think where the telling tale happens is in the points for and against. They've gifted away 194 points. Oof. So, I mean, Catalans are below them of points for and against. They are 108 points for and against, minus 108, and they are on 102. And Salford are only on minus 44. So there's a big, I mean, that tells that, you know, yes, Salford are losing, but they've lost. I mean, Salford is a funny one because they could have won their game on the weekend. It could have swung either way with them and Widnes. But equally, when they played Wakefield earlier on in the season and they didn't kick the goals that they had the opportunity. So they could be sitting on 8 points or at least 6 points, we'd argue. But is that a telltale sign? It's not just a matter of that you're not winning, it's how you're losing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a big call to sack the coach, especially with Easter coming up.
Seven games.
Yeah. Maybe they got a bit twitchy there, but you know, they must know what they're doing. They must have somebody lined up, but you would have thought so. You can't imagine them sacking the coach and having nobody in
mind.
Have
you heard something that you want to share with us,
Minnie? Nah, I'm just going to pass the mic over to him.
Oh, he quickly backed out of that, didn't he? Oh, I thought it was Leon Price anyway.
No, well,
they've got to buy him out of his Workington contract.
I reckon he'd come out of retirement for Huddersfield.
He's been putting
it on
Facebook. He's going to come out of retirement for Workington. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I put it on that, like when he's running about and saying, oh, it was absolutely brilliant to get back out of there. I said, you heard it here first.
Put the ball away
against Bradford. I reckon he's going to come out of retirement against Bradford. we'll just work him over. We'll just spot him.
You're doing that because you know they're going to do that to you.
Yeah, that's happening to me.
As he just pushes aside his free bun that he got from that coffee
the
shop.
The muffin man.
The muffin.
need to get calories in. We've got a busy schedule, haven't we? Yeah.
So come on, Aaron. You're the man who's got his finger on the pulse. What are the rumours coming out of the in and around the Huddersfield camp?
Chris Foreman's going to do it. Definitely over Easter, probably a little bit beyond that, I think. It looks like, obviously, Chris Foreman's going to be the man who carries on from Rick Stone.
I'm sorry to cut across you here, but yesterday, when the news broke, Chris was in hospital and celebrating the birth of his son.
Is that a dip right down there?
So, for me, timing's a bit weird, you know, like we're talking about. You've got the very busy Easter period coming up with two Super League games on that. And two, the guy that you're putting in as HC has got a brand new baby on his hands. Congratulations, Chris, by the way. We love you, Spooky.
I like Chris. I think he's really well thought of. He's been in that system and that structure for a while. He's a very, very smart guy. So I think he'll make a great coach someday, whether it's now, whether it's next year, whether it's a few years down the line. I know there's the talk of it's only 7 games, but that's a third of the regular season already. In the next 10 days, everyone will have played 10 games. Mm. You're almost halfway through then all of a sudden. So they've not made this decision lightly. I think you're right. The way they've been losing games is probably more damning than the fact they've been losing them, because they're a good Easter away from being in the top half, I guess, in a week and a half's time. But that whole
can I toss this into the mix though? They're having a horrendous amount of injuries at the moment.
They are, but that
does not help.
But they spend the cap. There's a lot of good players in there. Who are underperforming. There are obviously teams above them who don't spend the cap that are working with their resources better than what Huddersfield are. Clearly, the game for me was that whole KR game where, I mean, anyone can sort of accept how many did they lose to Wigan by. I think it was about 30 points, wasn't it, in the end. That can happen at Wigan, especially with Wigan playing well at the minute. But the whole KR game at home, when Hull KR were really in a hole and Huddersfield just didn't seem to have any response whatsoever, with a lot of talent out on that field, that was the more damning one for me. And he cut a pretty forlorn figure afterwards, did Rick Stone. Mm. He got them in the 8 last year, but I think Huddersfield are obviously a little bit more ambitious than that, especially when you spend the full cap. So, interesting to see where they turn next, but I would lean towards Elliot. Knowing the limited amount I know about the sport, you generally don't bullet a coach midway through the year unless you've got something else in mind. You saw it 2 years ago when Paul Anderson got sacked. Rick Stone was in pretty quickly. So the feelers are out there, I would imagine, and I think they'll have an idea where they're going now.
So let's turn it back to the performance side, boys. Ross, Elliot, the one thing that I think that's been missing from Huddersfield's performance this year is the hustle. And you know what I mean by the hustle? Yeah. Is when you've got that extra bit of energy. So when the third man's going back to join the line, what I've seen with all Super League clubs is guys are hustling back. That you see it in the NRL, you're seeing it in the Super League. The guys are getting back on side with some impetus. Just those little 1%ers as opposed to trailing back. And that's you know, I've never seen a coach say just trail back. You've got to get back and reload. So how does that become a coach's problem, or what is that? Let me ask you that question. What is that? What's the difference between being in the middle of the hustle and having hustle as a part of what you do and not having that, and it's just energy just not there?
I think from what I spoke to people who I know were at the club and people around the club, I don't think it's been a happy camp. People, from what I've heard, some people, you know, don't take to Rick Stone's style of coaching.
Okay.
I think it might be, you know, with the way they're losing, it could be atmosphere, you know, in the club, people, you know, heads are right on it, you know, don't really.
And you're not saying that people don't like each other.
No,
what you're saying
like
is that the belief isn't there.
Yeah, the belief isn't there. And, you know, like for us at Bradford, we all believe we can do great things. We all believe, you know, we're a special squad. So we're putting that extra 10% in, we're going, we're willing to die for each other. I think at Huddersfield, like you said, the trailing back, the hustle's not there. It's like something's missing. Like, you know, maybe Chris Foreman can rejuvenate the squad and everyone start, you know, firing again. But yeah,
I think it's about a case of buying in. And for me, those results look like the Huddersfield boys aren't buying in, or wasn't buying in, to Rick Stone's culture, Rick Stone's plans, his structure. And if you don't buy in with a coach, then you're not going to work work your nuts off to get back that 10, you know, that 10 yards of third man. Yeah. You're not going to put that extra when, you know, those hard moments where you have to really work.
And sometimes NRL coaches don't fit in over here.
Mm.
You know, it's one of those things that sometimes when an NRL or a Super League coach goes to France, and culturally it's very different, and they can't adapt what they do to make it work in that environment. Maybe that's what we're seeing here. Because many of the players and everything, the structure they're doing, we've seen it all before, but maybe it's how you deliver it.
Yeah, I think Huddersfield are a club have struggled since, you know, when they won the league leaders. Mm-hmm. Ever since that season, it's gone right for them ever since, you know. Everyone said, right, they've won the league leaders, I think they can take it to next step, you know, they can maybe get to a grand final, maybe get to a semi-final, but after that league leaders, it's just been on a decline since then.
You mentioned obviously Aussies coming over and buying into the way we do things and things like that. I've spoke to a few people in the game and they all speak very highly of Justin Holbrook, saying that he was quick to ring other coaches, speak to senior players within the game, and find out about the English culture and the way English rugby league is played, because it's very different. It's very attack based, whereas in the NRL it's very defence orientated,
statistically oriented.
Very routine and very military, isn't it? No surprise, look who's top of the comp. St Helens, I think there's a bit of an understanding that Holbrook's bought into the English way.
Yeah.
Whether some coaches, some players don't do that enough, I don't know, but I think there's a bit of a clue there that obviously the team leading the comp are managed by an Aussie who reportedly is very keen to buy into the English side of things.
Well, one thing that I did notice, I work with them on the World Cup things as a co-presenter or pundit on the show.
He's very smart.
And he said when he was talking, referring to England, he said we. I'd say if that's not a better indication, he hasn't been in the country 3 months and he's already calling England we. You've got to love that from an Aussie. All right, when I go to a break, when we come back, we're going to look around the world of rugby league and let's talk about all the hottest topics. So stick with us right here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2. On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live in the studio with Ross Peltier, Elliot Minchella and Aaron Bauer. And In this segment, we're going to look about all the hottest topics in the sport of rugby league. And then the first one I've got to start with, and it's bouncing about, and there's players that are stating stuff on social media, and officials are coming out and stating stuff as well, and players' associations are getting involved. And that is NRL clubs basically complaining, and the player associations thrown in there, Australian Player Association that is, about the international test between England and New Zealand in Denver. What are your guys' thoughts on that? I titled this, we've got a working document in front of us, I titled this, Whinging Aussies.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know,
they're just whinging, aren't they?
Yeah.
Every year basically. They say the same thing. If you put into context their State of Origin series, where they have to back up 2 days later and it's absolutely brutal, is their State of Origin. We're talking about an international game here that's going to, you know, take our sport to brand new audiences.
Yeah, it's double standards, isn't it? I mean, you wouldn't expect anything else from them, really. They don't give a damn about anyone but themselves, especially when it comes to rugby league. I think they'd be perfectly happy if everyone just folded, packed up, and everyone could just watch the NRL every week. There's just such a lack of care about the greater good of the game. I mean, it's great for them because the NRL rules the land in Australia, rugby league rules the land, but it doesn't everywhere else across the globe.
It doesn't rule the land in Australia, in pockets of Australia, New South Wales,
Queensland, yeah, exactly. And Melbourne. It rules the roost.
Well, it doesn't in Melbourne. Yeah. Melbourne's ruled by AFL, but they've got a great team in Melbourne.
Yeah. But everywhere else, rugby league doesn't have much of a presence outside maybe Auckland and the M62 corridor in England. So this could be this isn't the be all and end all. Denver, the rugby league wouldn't explode overnight if 50,000 people watch England play New Zealand, but it's the start because there's a World Cup in 7 years' time as well. The thing is, nobody's actually come out and said on the record, you know, officially, we're stopping this from happening. It's all hearsay at the minute. The only people who have commented are the team doctors from both teams who've said it's medically safe, trying to throw that concern out of the window. And the RFL have put a statement out, haven't they, with the players, the NRL-based English players, including Sam Burgess and even Wayne Bennett, saying, look, we want this to happen. So I think it will happen. It's a shame that they're trying to fight it from happening, some of the NRL clubs, if reports are to be believed. But I wouldn't be too concerned. The deal's signed. The players, certainly the bigger players, which we were just talking about off-air, have that pulling power with their clubs. I think that if they say, look, I'm going, I'm playing, I don't think the clubs would be realistically able to stand in their way.
I think they've all signed a pact that they actually won't stand in the way of international rugby league.
The bigger issue might be trying to get a New Zealand team cobbled together, because I would imagine if you take a 19-man squad to Denver, how many are going to be playing for New Zealand Warriors? Probably a lot. Maybe, I don't know, I'm guessing, maybe 8, 9, 10. Mm-hmm. So they might have to cap how many New Zealand Warriors players can go. They might be seriously against it. There was talk that they'd call a few Super League players up, but you want to see a proper Kiwis test team, don't you, playing over there? Otherwise, you might have a chance.
Yeah. Actually, I remember a couple of years after retiring from International Rugby League, I think I was playing for Lee Centurions in the championship at that time, and I thought there was an international series which I went to do a little bit of background support, media support, but I was in the same hotel as a Kiwi, so they invited me down to present all the players with their starting 17 shirts, which they normally get a former Kiwi to come in and do that. And I remember thinking to myself, before, on the way to the hotel, this is in France, and on the way to the hotel, I think to myself, I wonder if I could still hack it, you know? I wonder, it's been about, I don't know, 5 years. I'm still playing professional rugby, but it's been about 5 years since I've played for the Kiwis. 2006 was my last game. But I wonder if I could, you know, I still feel, you know, at least in the mind. Anyway, as I'm handing out these shirts, I'm just looking at the size of these guys and they're all towering over me. I'm just thinking to myself, no chance, son. Absolutely no chance. And I think to myself, how did I even play against these, you know, alongside these guys? And yeah, absolutely, absolutely no chance. Well, look, Reggae Warriors get the opportunity to go to Denver. You're there, aren't you, Ross Boutier? I mean, you've got to put down those muffins again.
First one on plane. I'm there. No, we're going to America end of this year already, so, you know, we don't complain about going to Florida. But, no, you know, we everyone said, you know, after World Cup, we need more International Rugby League. Everyone wants more International Rugby League. It's one of the pinnacles of, you know, representing a nation and playing.
So Aaron mentioned that in 7 years' time there's going to be a World Cup there, and what he's talking about is the United States have won the rights to hold the next Rugby League World Cup. So that's in 2025. The next World Cup is in 2021 on home soil here in the UK. What we're talking about is there's an opportunity to leverage the World Cup and build what we would call in marketing world marketing beats, and those beats are these big events with these big teams that are very interesting to watch. The Tongan team seem to be solidifying. So what I would hope that the likes of the international board would be investing more money into, because Tongan nationals have a really strong nucleus of players. There's a strong generation of players that are coming through the NRL at this point in time. So they've got some depth, which they've never had before. Equally, I reckon Samoa, you could do the same. And you could start to, but that needs investment. And it's whether or not the international game has that type of investment, equally has that type of pull. What would you guys be thinking, though? Because there is rumours of there's going to be a letter circulated by the Players Association about the risk of playing to kind of support the NRL clubs.
No, I don't know. You know,
as a player, and all the players want to play in these games.
Everyone wants to play.
What would you feel that the body that sort of represents you is sort of trying to get you out of it as well?
Yeah, they're working for the clubs now. I don't think any player would say they don't want to go play in this game, because, you know, it's a massive opportunity in life to say that you've just, you know, you've played England in Denver in front of however many people there. So I wouldn't want to. I won't be happy about it.
Yeah, it's a lot of rubbish in my opinion. Why you would not want this game to go ahead, I've got no idea. Maybe the Aussies, obviously they're at the top and they're not bothered about anybody else underneath them. Obviously, for the greater of the game, this game should go ahead, and you know, I just think it's absolutely a load of rubbish.
Yeah, but if you look at reasons like football's international calendar, like, you know, football, they'll go to Russia and come back within 3 days and then play for a club on the weekend. You know, a lot of other sports do it. It's not
Are we running the risk of being really soft? Are we running the risk of really over-sanitising our sport?
Yeah, I think it is.
This is one of the things that's got me. So we're talking about how do we use rugby league, its unique selling points. And I can't remember if we were having the conversation last week. I was having a conversation over the last 7 days. And we were talking about how when the NRL brought in the no shoulder charge rule. I was just a little bit curious because all the marketing collateral that I had seen for the NRL had shoulder charges. I mean, 75% of the footage that the big hit contact were all shoulder charges. So ultimately, you've taken out one of the unique selling points for the sport. So are we, as a sport, are we running the risk of over-sanitising our sport? Because if you handed it over to Eddie Hearns, for example, and what they like to do is anchor into specific sort of emotive elements of whatever sport that they're promoting. So it could be the drama, and it could be the risk involved, the threat involved. And part and parcel, that's... our sport has all of that type of thing. So are we doing a job of going too far with the player welfare? That's an important thing because you guys are still, you guys are still suiting up.
Yeah, I think sometimes we're his own worst enemy in the sport, especially in, something like that. Like, I totally agree. Taking the shoulder charge out of the game is taking something away, taking excitement away. I just can't see... going back to my point, I just can't see how this game cannot go ahead.
I would love to do a straw poll just to see how many actual players and professionals would actually like to bring the shoulder charge back. And if there was over in excess of 75%, because you'd want to have a proper overriding, share and vote. I reckon reevaluate whether or not that rule is reinstated.
I think it'd just be the halfbacks voting no and everybody else voting yeah.
Bring back the biff, isn't it? That's what everyone wants.
All right, we're going to go to a break. But first up, let's do the traffic.
On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show, live in the studio with Ross Peltier and Aaron Bauer. No, Elliot Mintella. He's done and dusted. It's his missus' birthday this evening, so he's taking her out for something special. I like, though, that he's taken the effort, made the effort to come in on her birthday.
You like it so much that you're hanging him out to dry live on air.
Live on air.
I mean, he could have waited, 15 minutes, surely. She could have waited 10 minutes. It's pouring it.
He's only taken her to pizza across the road as well.
Car outside.
And Bolarama.
Bolarama. Not The Simpsons.
I'm on The Simpsons. I heard The Simpsons socks on. Anyway. So we're talking rugby league. Oh, we were just talking about on the back of player welfare, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, there's two games over the course of the weekend. It's something that we're going to deal with, and it's going to be high on the agenda, the discussion agenda across the sport of rugby league, because we're talking about players having basically 48 hours recovery time before they have to go back into battle again. Aaron, from a media point of view, are you guys bored of talking about it?
A little bit.
Nothing's happened.
I've always been a believer that it's not those two games in 4 days that's the problem. It's probably that third one where the players start to really, really feel it. That, obviously, you played at the start of the week. You normally, if you play at the weekend, you start the following...
No, I can promise you, it is a second game.
All right, I'm going to say the start of that following week's normally quite quiet,
isn't it? I think we as supporters, we see the impact on that third game.
That's what you're trying to make.
Real low quality,
and blowout scores, and Super League now, the quality is tighter than it's ever been, but I think, I don't know the fixtures off by hand, but I think if some of the top teams are playing some of the bottom teams over Easter, I think you'll see a few blowout scores. I like Easter from a media perspective and from a fan perspective, because you watch pretty much non-stop rugby league, can't you, four or 5 days. And
it's a bit like the magic weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, and the games are great. I mean, Friday alone, sit in front of your telly or go to the pub, Hull Derby, then Saints Wigan, 5-6 hours of really, really good rugby in front of probably 2 sell-out crowds. You know, what's not to love? I'm all for Easter. I think it's great, but I can understand why the players find it really, really tough.
Well, they say it takes 72 hours to recover from that sort of contusion, that sort of short impact muscle bruising, that type of thing. So just as normal knocks that you get.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's now Wednesday. You played on Sunday. Have you completely got over all of the knocks that you received from the game?
This week I have, you know, but everyone's different. I think the week when we played Keighley, I'll
shows you how much you put it in on the weekend.
against Steve Cross over there.
Steve Crossy's in bits and pieces. Ross came off the bench, played in a dinner suit.
Nah, not
and John Keir was the guy that you were talking about. He was talking about, eh?
No, actually, no. He praised forward pack for Sunday. He actually said, you know what I mean? In video, he made a lot of points.
No, actually,
we put him on the front foot and then we've thrown it away.
100%. You guys didn't have a problem getting up the field.
Yeah,
actually, more often than not, you went at least 60 metres. So I'll take my hat off to. I'm about to say I'll agree with John. John doesn't need me to agree with him.
Yeah,
he knows his job. So
Like I was saying, the Keighley game, I was struggling till about Thursday. I was stiff then, you know. But every week's different. We've got this busy Easter period. We know it's coming. You know, there's no point complaining about it as a player. Like you get through it. You know, I enjoy playing more than training, so it's not too bad.
How? I mean, I got to admit, we played on Friday, and then all I would do Saturday and Sunday, it's probably the wrong thing to do, would just basically lie on the couch. Mm. You go have rehab on the Saturday morning, and then you'd have a little bit of a captain's knock or maybe just a video session. You'd have Sunday off. But I literally would not get off the couch thinking that was the right thing to do. What's the science like now?
I think you said active recovery, like a 20-minute walk or just, you know, get your body moving
and what is an active recovery for? Everyone's different. So some will go play tennis, some will play golf. What's active recovery for Ross Peltier?
I live next to Lister Park, so my missus, you know, texts me, I just go walk around the park and that. It's a nice park to have a walk.
Do you hold hands? Do you do what Elliot Minchella's doing right now and holding hands?
No, I don't really hold hands.
Hold hands in public. Be that guy. Let's look at some of the big games coming up over the course of this Easter weekend. I don't think they get... Well, look, the tomorrow night's game, Wakefield versus Cass, I think that's going to be... Let's discuss that one, because I think that's going to be tasty.
Yeah, look, Cass, I think everyone were quick to write them off and write their epitaph after one round of the season. They've won four straight since, and they've only played five games, whereas most of us have played seven and eight. So they're going to be in good shape going into Easter, aren't they? I mean, obviously they get the luxury of playing Thursday, Monday rather than Friday, Monday, which will obviously be good for them. Mm. But this will be a great game. It should be a big crowd at Wakefield. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a tough one to call. Wakefield have had a couple of bad defeats, but really, still a very, very good team, and they'll still cause Cass a lot of problems. I think the three big games of the weekend, I think, are all flips of coins. I think genuinely tough to call.
And what are those three games to you?
Well, the Hull derby as well.
Why? With Hull FC,
it's Hull, isn't it? It's an in-the-city derby.
And it's one of those things where you just chuck the form book out the window and...
Yeah.
FC's form hasn't been that good, has it?
Yeah, they're both struggling, but Saints Wigan, for me...
There's only a win difference in
exactly. Both. Saints Wigan's the biggest game in rugby league for me.
Let's talk Saints Wigan. Let's talk Benny Barber and Sam Tompkins. Yeah. Both of them are in form. Benny Barber's probably got to get the lion's share of being in form as players go. But Sam's back.
And it's 1-2 as well on the league table.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not wobbling in this game. I think St Helens were atrocious first quarter last year and they picked it up when Holbrook came in, but... Both playing so well, probably the two best teams in the comp at the minute. Everything revolves around Barber and Tompkins for me. Good chance for everyone's talking about Barber, aren't they? Saying Man of Steel, I think a good performance for Sam Tompkins. Not only puts him up in that bracket with Barber again, but probably makes England think a little bit as well. Kev Brown's out of the picture now. There is a space. You know, I know they said they're not going to call anyone up for now, but they'll be watching. And a good performance in front of a massive crowd might just get England thinking about Sam Tompkins again.
Why wouldn't Tompkins be in there? Mm-hmm. I'm Wayne Bennett. I saw some really atrocious rugby league played by Sam Tompkins in his last season and a half for the New Zealand Warriors. He had a massive array of injuries. Mm. that stopped them from really performing. And the Warriors were circling the drain at that point in time. They were playing poorly. Shaun Johnson wasn't clicking. But what I did watch when I'm a Warriors fan, so I watched a lot of New Zealand Warriors games. When Sam first went there fresh, him and Shaun Johnson were devastating. Mm. He took weight off Shaun Johnson. And Shaun Johnson were able to come up with some absolutely brilliant plays. So why wouldn't you? With Sam now getting back into form, why wouldn't you? Got the experience there. He's showing much of that form once again. But more importantly, it's guys like him who bring on the next generation, teach the culture of success.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's fitter as well now than he's probably been for a long time. I think he said pre-season, his first pre-season for 9 years, since he was maybe, 19, 20 years old. That's a long time without a full pre-season. To maintain that level of performance is almost impossible. He's more mature now. I think he's more complete. Obviously, his game was built around that devastating pace and those line breaks, but he's more complete now. I think he's a great fullback, really well-rounded. And he's the kind of fullback I'm surprised Bennett hasn't looked at and thought, I like him, because he can defend, he can marshal the line well, he can organise players well, and he comes into the line still with real, real devastating accuracy. So I'd be all for him in the setup. In fact, I'd probably go as far as saying with Hardacre out the picture now, I think he'd be my first choice fullback.
I like it. Now, we're going to move away from the Super League, and for me, the biggest game of the championship has got to be Featherstone at home to Toronto. That seems tasty, doesn't it?
I think Toronto, they've not been winning as big as everyone thought they would be winning. I think they beat Rochdale by about a point, so they might be struggling a bit there, and I think Feather have been on a good vein of form, so it makes for an interesting game.
I mean, what's it, Featherstone are sitting on 12 points at this point in time, and Toronto are behind them on 11 points. They've got everything to play for, haven't they?
Yeah, Feather are a good club as well. They're obviously competing year in, year out with those full-time clubs. They're up there again. Are they third in the league, I think, Featherstone? Behind Toulouse and London, two full-time clubs, and in front of another Toronto. Two in Toronto and Lee as well. Mm-hmm. So they're right in the thick of it for the qualifiers again. They've got a great spine. I know they're doing a really good job in marketing that game and bigging it up. I think they're hopeful of a bumper crowd, even though there's going to be no away fans. Toronto haven't quite had it as easy as I think they might have thought they were going to. They obviously blitzed through League One last year, and with the talent and the riches they've got, they should really be winning every week. But they've found it a lot tougher, whether it's complacency, whether it's just players not performing. I'm not sure, because I haven't seen them yet in depth, but they'll find it really tough on Friday.
Ross, just quickly, Friday afternoon for you against Oldham, what will John be looking for? What is he looking for from yourself?
I just think he's looking for a big reaction from last week. I think the Hunslet game, to pan out how it did, I think it was the perfect time for it to happen, for us to have a dip in form, because you'll see a reaction on Friday, and we played some of the worst stuff we might play all year, and Hunslet played very good, so I think it stands in good stead for Monday, when if we switch it on and we can control the game and play power, we can control it easier when we're
alright. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's us for tonight. My thanks to Aaron, Elliot and Ross. We love you. We'll be back next week. Thank you.
Listen back to today's show and all previous Robbie Hunter Paul shows at pulse2.com.